This is Catalog and Cocktails,
presented by Data.World.
Hello, everyone. It is Wednesday once again. It's time for Catalog and Cocktails, presented by Data.World, the enterprise data catalog for the modern data stack. We're coming to you live from Austin, Texas. It's an honest, no BS, non-salesy conversation about enterprise data management with a tasty beverage in hand. I'm Tim Gasper, longtime data nerd and product guy at Data.World, joined by Juan.
Hey, Tim. I'm Juan Cicado, principal scientist at Data.World. And as always, it's a pleasure. Middle of the week, end of the day, and we're both in Austin, but you're in the office. I'm at home today. We should have coordinated this, but it doesn't matter. All right. Today, we have a guest who is somebody who I recently met through social media. This Twitter and LinkedIn is such a cool venue to be able to go meet people. And this person started asking a bunch of questions about data modeling and just asking all the questions that I always ask myself and I don't hear anybody else asking. And I ask myself, why? And I'm like, who is this person? I want to get to know this person. This person is Ergis Chiblati. He is, if you must be following him on LinkedIn, on Twitter. If you're not, you are really missing out. He is really on this mission to make sure that, to help the world on data modeling. He has written a book about minimal SQL design patterns. We're going to talk about the work that he's doing on data modeling. Ergis, how are you doing?
Hello, everyone. I am doing really, really well today. It's a beautiful day out here in Boston on the East Coast. And I'm pretty excited to be part of this podcast.
Well, we're so happy to have you, and so cool that we were able to actually meet up in person a few weeks ago. Yes. When I was in Boston. That was really cool.
That was fun.
Yeah. So what are we drinking? What are we toasting for?
I'm having a seltzer with lime. I'm driving later and I have an empty stomach, so I don't want to have anything alcoholic. And I'm toasting to data models.
I think that's going to be a big topic today for sure. How about you, Tim?
I think so. I am drinking a Sierra Nevada. I think this is actually my first episode where I'm drinking a beer. So this is a milestone. I've always done cocktails or at least like something straight before. So Sierra Nevada Wonderland Nectarine Ale. So looking forward to this one.
Wow.
And then cheers to data models for sure. And then also cheers to, I took a vacation last week. If you saw our last episode, I was in Fredericksburg and I had a pool behind me because me and the kids were hanging out at the pool. And that was a lot of fun. So cheers to vacations.
And I'm having something in honor of Ergis, who's Albanian, and I have a good Albanian connection. One of my roommates and best friends is Albanian. So I, throughout college, I had a lot of Albanian raki. I have to give it a name, but this is an Albanian Austin Mexican raki cobbler. I gotta give it a better name. So it has Albanian raki, it's Austin Waterloo grape sparkling water, and Mexican agave syrup. I have a bunch of frozen raspberries and blueberries. I have to say, this is really good right now. So, and I'm going to test.
Cool.
I'm actually having like a real cocktail. Finally, I've been cheating a lot and having a beer and sort of, I had water last time. But anyways, cheers to models, the data models, to vacations and to cocktails. So cheers to that.
Cheers.
All right. So warm up question of the day. Why are data models such freaking divas?
Why are data models divas? Well, what is the definition of a diva? Is someone who prances around and pretends to be or is this larger than life persona? And well, I guess data models will fit that description. They are definitely larger than life, given that. Well, I mean, people just don't really do them right. That's, I guess that's as
You're
far
really
as
I'm rolling with this metaphor,
that's
man.
That's as far as I want to take.
This is right on the spot because we told you this question like literally 2 minutes ago. So that's actually a good one.
That was really good.
Right? So they are larger than life. They kind of like consume everybody's time and resources on, you know, cloud warehouses. So yeah, they are big divas.
You don't give them enough attention, right?
They really don't get enough attention. No, yeah. No. And they require it. And that's the other thing with divas. They require a lot of attention.
Okay, we're not starting out here on the right foot. We want to really talk very positive about data models right now. So,
All right,
this is a good segue to kick this off. So, all right, Ergus, honest, no BS. Why aren't we talking about data modeling today?
Well, Juan, it's not that we're not talking about data models. It's that people have kind of changed their opinion or their definition of data models. So you see, with the current sort of modern data stack implementation, and we can talk about that later, but with the current modern data stack, data models have become basically a one-off ad hoc reporting data set. So, you know, let's say you need a report that does funnel analysis or like a customer 360, and you have to build a custom model from scratch, start with source data, do all the transformations, and get to the final result. And so what has changed is people are thinking of data models as these, you know, I need a model for this dashboard, or I need a model for this machine learning application. Right. And so what people aren't talking about, and what you and I talked about when we met in person, is the idea of having kind of a business encompassing data model, like a full business encompassing data model that contains all of the entities, the attributes, and the relations among these attributes that kind of make sense to any business person, right? The idea of a data model is that if I look at, say, kind of an entity relationship diagram, the ERD, I should be able to see what is important to this business, right? So say we have customers, we have, say, orders, we have products, we have, you know, customer activities, purchases, discounts, et cetera, et cetera. So all these things are important to the business. Now, in the current implementation of, say, the modern data stack, what's happening is this data is coming into a data warehouse, into a source schema. And then a lot of transformations are happening in between. And then whenever somebody needs, say, a dashboard that has customers and orders and products, they just kind of do a, like some ad hoc implementation that is unique to that specific application, as opposed to having, you know, well-defined schemas, well-defined tables and objects that anybody can query and use and build models on top of. So I think that's what's happening these days in the industry.
So like the technology lens, whether it's the application or performance concerns, or even just the needs of the particular person who built the model in the first place, tends to be more of the central concern. Maybe that's the way the lens that people are thinking about models. They're not thinking about models in terms of modeling the business.
Exactly. In DBT or data build tool parlance, a model is basically a one-off materialized table or a view that serves a very specific purpose, right? So you take source data, you do a bunch of transformations, and then you create a model which serves a specific purpose. However, what I have seen in my career is a lot of duplication of logic in these models, right? So, you know, if a data scientist needs products and customers and something else, say web activity, they have to start from scratch. They go to perhaps some sort of a staging schema, and they have to kind of redo all the work, right? What is the definition of a customer? What is the definition of a product? What is the definition of this? So they have to look at existing code, copy and paste logic, and create their own model. And so what's happening is a lot of people are creating a lot of models with a lot of duplication of logic. And that's basically causing this like huge number of tables to be created in data warehouses, where then it becomes impossible for a new employee to come in and say, well, where do I go to find revenue? Where do I go to find customers? Where do I go to find products? And they have to sort of piece things together by looking at like a little bit of code here, a little bit of code there, and then they create their own model. So you kind of have this like loop of custom models on top of custom models, and sometimes they're joined with each other, which leads to terrible performance of these models, and more cloud compute resources being used, longer times for the models to complete, and so you create this huge. I think someone calls it the data swamp. From the data lake, you go to this data swamp, which is like this, everybody just throwing models left and right, right? And then tools like data catalogs come in to kind of sort all of this stuff out. I sort of liken it to this like weed garden. You have this, your data warehouse is this beautiful garden. You start with a really beautiful garden. And after a while, where people are coming in and just planting things all over the place for their needs. And what you end up with is this basically weeds everywhere. And so someone new that comes in, they can't find their way around this sort of this weed garden. But yeah. I think that's kind of what's happening. And then data catalog tools are coming in, trying to sort of impose this model on top and try to sort things out when that could have been done up front.
Yeah, you can look at the swamp and or the weed garden as you're kind of talking about and make sense of it. That's obviously valuable, but how do you stop that from happening in the first place, right? And I think that sometimes when you're searching a warehouse or something like that, let's just use warehouse as an example, right? Yeah. Maybe you can find the customer table, right? But once you start getting a little bit more complicated than that, right? Or you want to combine dimensions together, you want to combine metrics, all of a sudden, oh, I don't see what I'm looking for. Let me go add, I'm going to go plant my own plants now, right? I think that makes a lot of sense. One thing that I wonder, just as you're going through that explanation, or guess, is that what to you is a data model, right? Is a data model a schema? Is it, you mentioned DBT, is it like schema and the transformations that may move you to different versions of that schema? I guess, what is data model from your perspective?
Well, in traditional database parlance, you speak of like three different types of models. You have conceptual models, you have logical models, and then you have physical models. And then the conceptual model only has like the entities and how they relate. And then the logical model is like the schema that you mentioned. It has the entities and then their attributes. Perhaps you have a visual diagram that shows which entities have which attributes. And then the physical model is where you take this sort of logical model that you created, where you spoke to all like the business stakeholders and everybody kind of agreed upon the definitions of what a customer is, what the attributes of a customer are, name, email, etc. And then you take this and then you impose it on top of your specific implementation or on top of your data, and then you create like a physical model, which are tables and views in your data warehouse that then basically have a one-to-one mapping to this logical model, right? So that's where a tool like DBT could come in, because you can do the transformations to take your source data and to fit it into this. So there's not really a single definition. It's more like three sort of layers of definitions. But I think once you get to the physical model, then it's just a matter of maintaining it. And basically, perhaps you have a tool that can look at the schema and generate a diagram automatically, because you're not going to be going through all the steps every time. You're not going to redraw the conceptual model, redraw the logical model, and then actually do the implementation. So
in preparation of this episode, I actually went and got my database textbook from grad school. This is the classic, the complete book by Garcia Molina, Oldman, and Widman. So I looked up right now, what is a data model? A data model is a notation for describing data or information. And I think the word modeling and data modeling, all these things are just so overused, right? Because a data model is a notation to describing data or information. And then you have the relational model, right? Which is what relational databases are based out of. Then you have other types, I mean, semi-structured models like XML and JSON are also have a data model, which are tree structures. RDF is a model, which is the RDF graph model. There's other graph models around these things. But then what you're saying too is that you start talking about the conceptual, the logical, the physicals. Then we go into star schemas and Kimball Ross and all the star schemas, snowflake schemas, all these things. So words matter. So I think this is why it's important to go talk about data modeling and data models and all these things. But this is overwhelming, right? And people just get used to the ad hoc thing. And like, I need to transform data. And people say, give me data this way. And they just generate it that way. So I think this is one of the issues, is that the work that is happening, there is already this modeling, this knowledge work that it happens implicitly. And I think the issue that we're coming to is that it should be explicit. Now, in your experience, right, you've written the patterns book, and you've been really thinking about this course, about creating a course on data modeling. Mm. How do you start? I know I've gotten this question. I know you got this question. I know other people get this question too. People's like, so I just got hired and I need to go build a data warehouse and go, how do I start? So Ergist, how does one start?
I guess, and this may be completely the wrong way to do it, but what I have seen, the pattern is you start with what you need. The business needs a dashboard. The business needs to look at the performance. And so you build your custom model and you keep adding features to it over time. And eventually you reach an 800 line Gorilla SQL that does everything all in one place. And this is something that I'm dealing with today. One of my tasks is to actually fix a ginormous 800, 900,000 line SQL that basically does all the transformations all in one place. Is that the right place to start? I don't have a strong opinion one way or another. Like, often if you are trying to be agile or trying to be nimble, trying to like keep up with the business needs, you have to start with something. You have to start with an ad hoc model. But as the business gets complex and this model becomes unmaintainable, that's where you basically have to say, okay, hold on a second. Our business is pretty stable right now. We have processes in place that actually make sense. So let's stop and think about building a model that makes sense, that describes the entities that we care about in this business. Because I'll tell you this, because I have worked in startups as well. And a startup is struggling with finding product market fit, right? So if you come in and you start to talk to the executive suite and say, oh, tell me all the entities that you care about and all the attributes, they're going to be like, okay, I think customer, maybe email. They don't know. The business is still very much in flux. A lot of the processes are very much in flux. And I personally dealt with this in one of my previous jobs, where the product managers were constantly tweaking the processes that produced data. And as a result, there was a lot of churn. There was a lot of changes to the underlying data for my model. In that state, I cannot build this like beautiful model that describes all the entities that the business cares about. And this is if you follow, so this works if you're following like the traditional Kimball data modeling. Now, there may be techniques out there that I haven't explored yet, which would allow you to sort of build the model as you go along and eventually end up with a beautiful model. I have not seen that in real life.
So you are making a lot of great points, and I want to pin this, and I want to bring up the activity schema. I think that's something I want to touch in later. I think that's an interesting one. But there's two ways. I'm just kind of summarizing and also bring in my perspective I've had, because I've gone through this too. Like, I have gone through 10, 15 pages of a SQL query, right? Like, what does this stuff do? And it works. The query runs in 10 minutes and that generates data, and we make decisions on that stuff. But there's important knowledge that goes in there. So yeah, where should we start? And if you are running through, if you're an organization and you want to be able to kind of start cleaning, organizing what's going on, one great way is to say, what is that report, that dashboard that people are using all the time that they that's the only thing they have, but they don't know if it really is good or not. Like, let's really reverse engineer the knowledge, mm-hmm. the semantics that are in that query. You'll figure out what are the main things that happen in that. So I think that's definitely one great way. Now, assuming that exists, because sometimes it can just be in a spreadsheet and a bunch of macros in Excel, right? That's the other thing. Right. So that's one. And you've made a really great observation here is like in another scenario, like, oh, I should be able to go understand the business and understand the processes. And these are things that should be well established. But this may not be the scenario in a startup, because startup is moving around. So is the point that for startups, you should not be thinking about data modeling, just go do things ad hoc?
That's a good question, because like, I've only worked for one startup, and I saw this this pattern happen where things are constantly changing, constantly shifting. Most of the business processes were stable. I mean, the customer journey was mostly stable, but they were still tweaking, like the beginning of the journey and some of the endpoints. So does that actually mean don't build a model? I'll say that a lot of companies start out that way. I've talked to people where what they have right now is they have an application that's running on Django or some other type of CMS or tool, and they're querying the live database. They're writing queries directly on the live database in order to produce some reporting that says, here's how we're doing. Day to day, compare week over week, month over month. So a lot of companies start out that way, sort of by necessity, because nobody's thinking about building a model. It's way too early. What happens after is, at some point, that doesn't work anymore. At some point, somebody says, okay, this is causing way too much developer time to be wasted on them writing these queries and producing all of this work. So we should be thinking about a data warehouse. At this point, hopefully the business is stable enough that it necessitates moving data to a data warehouse. And once you start there, that's when you can then begin the work of doing some modeling. Where do you begin in that sense? You begin with this dashboard that you already have with the live system. And that's actually a great place to start, because you can create a parallel dashboard with data. And this is basically what I did in my previous job, where they already had a dashboard that was being fed from like an alternate ETL pipeline. We brought data in with a tool similar to like Stitch Data or Fivetran. We brought it into Redshift. We ran dbt, we joined data, and we produced a parallel dashboard. We basically copy pasted the looker dashboard, and we pointed it to the new data source, and we then compared every single metric one by one. This is a great way to start, because then you are guaranteed that, okay, you have all the data, you're not missing anything. Now you can actually start to build a model that makes sense, to kind of define, you know, the early entities that the company cares about. In my previous job at the startup, this was a boot camp for like a school, a boot camp type of school, that like a coding boot camp, where you, like, the entities were like student. Okay, what does it mean for a student to be enrolled in a course? Are they enrolled? Are they pre-enrolled? How far are they in the course, et cetera, et cetera. So that's when those entities then you can actually start to build a more mature model.
That makes sense. I think this is providing a lot of like interesting context about like how to approach this. And it kind of brings up the question for me of, you know, you've seen a lot and you've really dug into sort of what some of the better patterns are around being able to do modeling and do SQL and things like that, right? And kind of curious from your perspective, like for folks that are trying to build a schema on customer information or something like that, right? That's their thing, their widget, right? Mm-hmm. How should they go about this? Like if you're advising like some best practices on, you know, should they start, you know, in a perfect world, like are they starting with the core concepts, like depending on what model, like if they're doing Kimball-Ross or if they're doing more of a entity relationship approach, like mm-hmm. I guess what kind of best practices would you recommend to folks who are thinking about, you know, doing modeling well, doing it right?
Yeah, good question. What I do is I will sit down with the business stakeholders. It could be like a VP who's running that particular business unit, or it could be the existing analysts that are working on that team, which is actually what I'm doing right now in my current job. And I will start asking them questions. One of the first questions that I like to ask is, what does your workflow look like? So a business is, you can think of it as this like workflow of steps, or rather like a process that occurs in multiple steps. You take a customer that comes in to your website or tool or app or whatever, they do something, they go through a bunch of steps, you do something, you go through a bunch of steps, and finally they buy, or they do some activity where you make money, right? So I want to understand, what does it look like? And we start with a simple boxes and arrows diagram. Okay, customer comes in to the website, customer browses for product, customer chooses product, customer adds product to the cart, customer checks out, customer gets confirmation page, customer gets confirmation email. Okay, that's a business workflow that can apply to multiple businesses. I start there. That automatically gives you some ideas for where to begin. Okay, so we have a customer concept. We have a activity type of concept on the website. They're browsing, they're adding stuff to the cart, they're comparing prices. You then have a transactional, you have a product concept, you have a transaction concept, and then you have some kind of interaction with the customer. So you start there. You then say, okay, now do these entities make sense to you? Like, these are the steps in this business. They're browsing, they're adding to the cart, they're creating a cart, they're completing the transaction, etc. So I like to start there. That, like, this is a business process, right? And this automatically yields some ideas for where to begin. In my previous company, which was a boot camp, you don't have customers, you have students. Student comes in to the website, they look at the courses that you have available. They pick one that they're interested in. They fill out their information, their email. I want to learn more about this course. Okay, then we send them some marketing emails. So there was this like very lengthy process, but at each step you have some entity, and then you have some activity, and then you have, you know, potential other entities. And you then work with the analyst, you work with the business person to at least understand. This is sort of the conceptual layer, right? Oh, these are the concepts that I care about. Customer name, email, student email, et cetera, course, et cetera, et cetera. So,
okay. So I really want to dig into this because this was a really nice example of what you just went through. And this is like, you should be able to go understand your business. Let's literally, you said, we should go draw this out. You call it boxes and lines. I call it bubbles and lines on a whiteboard type of stuff.
Yeah.
So several things I want to go connect the dots here, right? One is, even though, for example, going back to your comment about the startups, like, we need to understand what that looks like today, because there are things that we're going to go shift and change. We're moving fast. What are the parts we're shifting? So before I was like, yeah, it probably doesn't make sense to not have to go do all this exercise about modeling and understanding it because we're moving so fast. But at the same time is, I want to know where we are today to figure out what things were changing. So I think there is an argument that startup or not startup, you should be able, you should be going through this data modeling exercise. So that's one thing. Second, I think the data engineers or data teams, they need to be able to go understand this, which means we need to bring in this notion of business literacy to the data teams and everybody else. We always talk about data literacy. Yeah, but we also need to think about business literacy, because everybody in the organization, tech, engineer, data person, they should be under to understand how their business works so they can be better, more productive within the organization. So that was another point I wanted to make. Third, you said something about, does it make sense to you? Once we draw this, does this concept make sense to you? And I asked myself, how do I know if something makes sense to me as like a consumer or as a consumer of the data or a business person? And kind of things that I've seen my experience is, if you want to say a lot of things about that thing, if I want to describe that thing, well, then that thing itself is important. Oh, that thing has a name. That thing has an email. That thing has a birthday. That thing is important to me. So what is that name of that thing, right? Hmm. So if I'm giving a lot of descriptions to that thing, then that thing is an important concept. And second is, if that thing is important, I need to refer to that thing. Therefore, I need to be able to give it an identity. And how am I going to uniquely identify that thing, that concept? So this is kind of the technique I've had, is like, how do I observe or acknowledge where the important concepts are? I'm making a lot of descriptions to that. And second, I want to be able to go identify that. So that was another point I want to make. And the final, another final point is, who is doing this? What is the role? Is this a data engineer? Is this a data analyst? Is this an analytics engineer? Like, because I want to get into the skills, because actually, this morning or today, I woke up, the folks from the Modern Data Stack newsletter, the community, there's a really cool community, moderndatastack.xyz. They reached out to me saying, hey, Juan, there's this question on their community board. Like, what data engineering practices do you recommend to bridge the gap between producers and consumers? So I provided my answer there. So check out the moderndatastack.xyz community post. But I think I also want to get into, like, what are these skills? Like, what are the skills that are going to survive the test of time and not just specific to technology? Anyways, I just ranted a lot like I usually do. So I'll shut up now. And I'll let you go. You guys talk.
Well, that's something that I think about a lot. If you are going to get into any career, it's important that you learn skills that will sort of outlast that particular job or the particular title that you can then take with you onto another job, right? And as I started my career as a business analyst, which is this very broad term where I was doing a variety of, you know, analytics, some data science, a lot of project and product management, and data engineering work. And what I discovered is that what I really, really enjoyed, since I'm a generalist, I like to talk to the various business stakeholders and understand their world, understand what they go through day to day. What are their processes? What are their workflows, processes? What things do they care about? You know, finance cares about revenue and perhaps some kind of profit or some kind of cash flow. You talk to sales and they care about, well, sales numbers, volume, perhaps revenue as well. You talk to marketing and they care about conversion rates, cost per customer, marketing spend, etc. You talk to operations, they care about something else. And so being at the center of this, like, I really, really enjoyed learning about the different facets of the business, because being in a data role and wanting to understand the business through data provides you this really beautiful lens of kind of understanding the perspectives of the different business stakeholders. And you kind of like become, it's the skill of empathy, right? You empathize with what they're going through. It makes me really, really angry sometimes when I see finance people copying and pasting data from some place that they ran some report, some dashboard. They put it in Excel. They data from another location. They put it in Excel. They use some crummy VLOOKUP to kind of put data together just so they can arrive at a particular number. And then I go in and I talk to them, and they've been doing this thing for 6 months, for a year, and it takes them 3, 5, 10 hours a week to produce something. And I look at it and I go, holy crap, like I could have talked to you about this. I could write a query that produces this thing in 2 seconds and have it refresh, you know, daily, hourly, however often you want. And basically I've 10x their productivity. You know, it maybe took me a couple of hours to write that query and make sure that it matches. But I mean, I get a kick out of being able to help various business stakeholders improve their productivity, get whatever they need faster, get to a result faster, get to a decision faster, right? So, like, I say empathy is like this really, it's not really about data, because data is a technical skill set that you learn. Sure, you can learn SQL, you can learn about cloud data warehouses, you can learn about modeling. But at the end of the day, that stuff could all change. You know, today it's Postgres and MySQL. Tomorrow it's DuckDB or some kind of, I don't know, cloud data warehouse that nobody has invented yet. And maybe, I mean, SQL has been around for 50 years and it's near and dear to my heart, but tomorrow some new language could supersede it, right? So at the end of the day, what is that skill that I can take from place to place to place? Well, it's the skill of empathy, of understanding the world of another business stakeholder, and kind of see how can I improve their workflow? How can I improve how can I improve their productivity? This doesn't just apply to data analysts, data scientists, data engineers, analytics engineers. This applies to regular engineers. This applies to anyone in the technical field. Most programmers just care about learning new languages, new frameworks, new what have you, right? At the end of the day, what is that in service of? Well, it's in service of automating business processes that someone is manually copying and pasting and like saving and finally achieving some result. And if you like this sort of stuff, if you enjoy interacting with a business like I do, that is a skill that nobody can take away from you. You know, tomorrow you could learn a new framework, new language, new database. At the end of the day, that skill is not going anywhere.
I love that. Ergus, like, we're both clapping on our side, because this, you know, people talk so much about hard skills when it comes, or, you know, I even think that's a terrible phrase. Like, there's like these technical kind of like programming language oriented or, you know, technical modeling oriented skills. And I think you're hitting something that isn't so obvious, but yet if you think about it, is so glaringly obvious, right? That empathy, understanding the business, is so critical. Like, we talk so much about data literacy, right? Like, oh, the business needs to understand data. But there is so much value to be tapped at the individual level as well as across organizations for data people to have business literacy, right?
Right. And at the end of the day, what is a data model? Going back to our definition, my definition is you're mapping something real into bits and bytes. You're mapping a real human being, a customer with their own needs, wants, desires, onto a digital representation that you can then hopefully use to serve that customer better, right? So at the end of the day, it's about that customer. It's about the service that you provide. It's about how you can provide that service better, right? That's why we build businesses at the end of the day, is to help people get things that they want or need that they couldn't otherwise get, right?
Make money, save money.
Yeah, but I want to connect another couple more dots. The empathy thing is fantastic. And I think this is something that we're not thinking about. And this is a soundbite that we need to go reuse and get. I'm going to write a post about this. We're like, this is awesome. One thing. Second, a real serial entrepreneur I really follow was Gary Hoover. And Gary Hoover has this, I mean, he's the founder of Hoover, right? The DNB, all that stuff. He has this course that he gives about entrepreneurship and companies. And he talks, companies exist to be able to go help society to go do things, what you just described. Mm-hmm. So I mean, companies are, we always think, oh, companies are the capitalists, they're all bad people, they want to go. Like, no, the companies exist to be able to go do good things and bring things. I mean, non-salesy here, I mean, we can talk this about Data.World with episode with Brett, but like, that's why Data.World is a B Corp, right? We're a public benefit corporation. We truly believe in this public benefit in addition to maximizing shareholder value, right? What you just said there is that you also want to make that we're putting all this data work at the end of the day is because we want to go help then customers. Like, we want to be able to understand you and be able to give you better services and stuff. And the data modeling and all this conversation, it's, I call this like the knowledge is the immaterial, right? It's stuff that's in our heads, is what we think. We can draw it on the whiteboard and stuff. But at the end, I want to be able to go tie that to the material, which is literally the bits. So it's like it is a quest of computation to be able to combine the data, the physical stuff, and the knowledge, which is the material stuff, and put it together. And with that, we're able to just go do really great things for your customers and also for humanity too, right? I mean, think about it in the science stuff.
Right. Sorry, Tim, you had something.
No, go ahead, and then I want to add something.
Well, the way that I like to think about sort of modeling from a different perspective is that I'm going on a discovery mission to like learn something that I didn't know, that I'm going to talk to the finance person and find out what they care about and why they care about it. Well, you care about revenue because that's what fuels the business. You care about profit because that's how you grow the company, et cetera, et cetera. And so at the end of the day, like, you have to connect that, whatever this person is looking for and why they're looking for that thing, back to what you know, which is like, oh, well, that exists as a field in this table and that exists as a field on this other table. So maybe we can like, you know, draw this out and like the idea to connect the real world to the digital world. It's not all about the digital, right? I guess to add to empathy, the second, I guess, skill or whatever that you learn that you take from with you everywhere that you go is that curiosity, the desire to learn about how this particular business works and sort of compare that with previous businesses that you've seen. And maybe as you look at that business and you compare it to previous businesses, you go, well, wait a minute. Why are you doing it like this and this and this? Why don't you do this and that and maybe cut that step out? Oh, because this other thing is happening. Oh, okay. So you are then growing as a person yourself. You're kind of like updating your own mental models in your mind for how the business works, which then helps you in a feedback loop to serve the business better. Right.
Yeah. So, and I love what Gordon's saying here to add the empathy. I think it's also the curiosity. And what you said, it's like you're curious to know how the business works. You're curious to know what questions they have and how can I help you? And you said to yourself, you get a kick out of like, oh, wow, I really helped them and they're getting more productive to that. A couple of things I want to go add and connect it to other episodes. One, we had an episode a while ago with Steve Whitla where we're talking about visual kind of understanding. And I think data modeling and understanding semantics, knowledge, all of this, how does that manifest in the real world? Get a marker, whiteboard, and draw your bubbles and lines. I think the visual aspect is really, really important about these things.
So we're
visual people. And I think what I tell people is like, hey, go draw it out and then go tell people, so what is a customer for you? And then they're not going to just point into one bubble or one box there. They're going to say, well, it's when the customer does this thing and this other thing. And they're like, oh, so that's your context around it. Go ask somebody else and they're going to draw something else. So it's a different context. So I think that's one of the things I wanted to go say is connected. There's this episode with Steve Whitla. Take a look at that for everybody who's listening. And the second one, you brought up the metrics and kind of what people are thinking about, revenue. And what we also need to think about is revenue is a metric, and this should be a calculation over our knowledge, semantic layer, our business conceptual layer, whatever, right? And we've had many conversations about this, right? With Bob Muglia, we talked about what is a metrics, which is a calculation, right? A formula, a function over the relationships between your business concepts. Your business relationship between business concepts, that's your model right there, and your metric is over. Is a function, a query over that. And we also had that episode about metrics layer with Nick Handel from Transform, where I was arguing like, if we're really successful at having a semantic layer, conceptual model, a business, a knowledge graph, putting this all in the same bucket here.
Yeah.
A metric should literally be a very simple query over that very clean conceptual model, business model, semantic layer, whatever you want to go call it.
Yeah.
Well, we can keep talking. I talk about the knowledge first approach and talk about knowledge, and this is my passion. So I am so happy we've been talking about this, Ergus. I'm really happy we connected about this. We can talk for hours. So, but we're going to head to our lightning round. But before that, I just want to say this episode is brought to you by Data.World, the enterprise data catalog for the modern data stack. Data.World makes the data discovery, governance, and analysis easy, turning data workers into knowledge superheroes. To learn more, visit the website at data.world. And with that, we're going to move to our lightning round. We got four questions. Just quick yes or no answer, some context, and we always do this on the fly. So I'll do the first one. Should companies have a single enterprise data model?
Yes. Absolutely yes.
All right.
Awesome. Second question. Is it a good thing that, you know, analysts, analytics engineers, data engineers, et cetera, are doing data modeling as part of their jobs, like using DBT, doing, you know, defining the transformations? Or should we really be having more like dedicated people, like data architects, you know, those types of folks that are really focused on the data modeling?
Oof, that's not a simple yes or no answer. That is a very nuanced answer there. I'll give you my take on it. Is it a good thing? Yes, because someone has to do it. Are they doing it right? That's a separate conversation. Do you need data architects to help with that? Yes, at some point. But at the end of the day, somebody has to do something because it is somebody has to do the modeling because it's necessary and important for the company.
Someone has to do that knowledge work. That's
somebody has to do it.
Oh, that's what I think we're I'm the one who's been advocating for the knowledge engineer, the knowledge scientist. There is this particular role focusing on managing that knowledge. All right, next one. Should folks who are developing data models do extended rotations directly in the business? So sit next to the people in marketing or customer service or whatever, immerse yourself. Or is that going too far?
Nope, it's not going too far. Absolutely, 100% they should. If they don't, then they don't understand the business. They're just making stuff up as they go along. You don't want to be making stuff up.
Or making stuff up. Don't do that. And now, fourth question. So folks in the data space, especially in the modern data circles, are starting to get really excited about the semantic layer, about the metrics layer. I think, you know, knowledge graph and semantics old schoolers are like, we've been talking about this for a long time, looking in your direction, Juan. But, you know, it's cool that it's hot again, right? Do you feel like this is the future of data modeling, the sort of semantic layer, metrics layer? Maybe it's bigger than the warehouse. It's much more conceptual in nature. Is this the future of data modeling?
Well, you're asking me to prognosticate, and that is a dangerous exercise because people can point back and say, you said this, you are 100% wrong.
Ergas, you said blah, and you weren't right.
Right. So I'll say I'm not sure that it is the future. I think it should have already been the present. The company that I work with right now has this thing, a version of the metrics layer, and they've had it. Heck, they've had a data mesh for the past 10 years, but nobody has been talking about it. So there's your answer.
Yeah,
that's fair.
I think it's the present and the future and the past.
I do want to take the liberty going back to the first lightning round question, and because I saw a comment, there's the canonical model, and we talk about the business, the one single enterprise model, all these things. How do you avoid boiling the ocean? Like, how do you avoid going through the mistakes that people have been going through the last 20 years, trying to go build the entire model that represents the entire organization and fail to go do that?
My take on this is going back to whether you should build it top down or bottom up. I've only seen bottom up, meaning you start with what you need, and then eventually you refactor and refactor and refactor until you reach a stable model. So I'm going to say, how do you avoid boiling the ocean? You start with use cases that you care about. You have a use case for business reporting revenue. You have a use case for a customer 360 model. Start there. See what those two share, dimensions, keys, etc., and start to refactor, just like an engineer would, where they say, oh, I see a repeating pattern in use case 1, 2, and 3. I can probably abstract that out, put it into a separate layer, aka the model, and then have each one of these use cases have a pointer to each one. So we go back to like this engineering or software engineering concept of do not repeat yourself, DRY, right? You take code, and that's currently how it works, because nobody writes software perfectly from the ground up. You write software that works, that solves a problem. Then you go and you refactor and you say, oh, I see this function is called in 3 different places. I can abstract it out, put it into a library and reference it from all the locations. I think this would be the more preferred way of doing modeling.
Yeah, I this is a great approach you brought up, and the whole don't repeat yourself, the DRY. And I think also that's why, at the end of the day, it's a hybrid approach. Bottoms up and top down will give you the use cases. Bottoms up will do this. I mean, I think that's also important why you want to be able to go have a catalog so people can go find these things also and be able to expose what these things are and figure out how they go reuse. So, all right, so much great stuff. All right, now we have our mesh minute. Told you.
Oh boy.
1 minute to rant, pontificate, whatever you want about data mesh. Ready, set, Go.
Okay. Well, like I said earlier, the company that I currently work for has had a version of the data mesh for the past decade or so. There were feeds that were basically microservices that were feeding into a centralized data warehouse. And there was an enterprise data model. And there was a metrics layer. And there was even reverse ETL. There was an API that you can access. So I believe this method of separating kind of the who does what, so data producers, data consumers, whatever those terms are, is conceptually correct. The specific implementations, I have no opinions on those.
All right. You see, this is an interesting, what I find interesting about, we've been doing this question for, I don't know, the last couple months, and there only a handful of people have like been really critical about it. A lot of people are like, yeah, it's actually a great thing. And people's like, yeah, we've been actually doing it for a while. Let's finally give it a name. Right. And then a lot of it's like, it's more the conceptual part. The implementation is like, I don't care. Just whatever yeah. works from implementation.
Do you do microservices? Do you do like a separate schema in the warehouse that's only certain people can see? Whatever works for you. At the end of the day, being able to separate who owns what, like the data producers understand data better, understand the business better, so they can, you know, mess around with their logic in a way that makes more sense, so as to provide a consistent, let's call it like a data API to the data consumers. That's all an analyst cares about. Give me a customer with a name, an email, a date of birth, and a transaction with revenue and purchase amount. I can do magic. I don't care how you.
You are describing a data model right there.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
All right. All right. Tim, take us away with takeaways.
All right. Our guest, amazing, amazing chat today. Here's some of the takeaways that I wrote down. So first of all, people have changed their opinions on data models over time. Obviously, we've seen a lot of change throughout history. With modern data stack, data models often have started off as sort of this one-off sort of ad hoc sort of use case or data set, and they kind of evolve from there. You kind of talked about how modeling starts with these different specific use cases, and we haven't in the past been talking that much about like modeling the business, right? You really brought up this idea that we have to model the business and make that a much more central part of how we approach data modeling. And that's not been enough of part of the conversation. It's been more about performance characteristics. It's been more about, hey, here's how the data comes out of the application, right? And we have to kind of change our perspective on that. What are some of the pitfalls that happen with that, where you see things like, a lot of copy paste transformations, you see a lot of duplication of logic, you see sort of this like layer cake, you called it like the data swamp that starts to form around these things. And then it gets out of control. And where do you go from there? Right. And you talked about like kind of, you know, what is even a data model? Like, what is a data model in this context? And you talked about sort of these three key layers, the sort of the physical layer of the data, the logical layer of the data, how we're kind of organizing it, how it joins together, and then the conceptual layer. And the conceptual layer is especially important. That's especially the part that you kind of connected with the business process, the business workflows, that the conceptual layer is who's the customer, who are these different things. That's really important and doesn't get enough airtime. And you talked about, you know, like how do you start with data modeling? You kind of mentioned that like it's actually kind of okay that we're starting with this use case oriented approach, right? You got to do what you got to do in order to get the answers you need to. But how do you actually refactor that more? How do you fight the tendency to always want to kind of go to the technical angle of view of it and the ad hoc view of it? And instead, how do you start to focus more on the business angle, the refactoring, the don't repeat yourself? So ton more, but I'll pass it over to you, Juan. What were your big takeaways?
Oh, so many here. So
best practices for data modeling. Get the right business stakeholders together, right? This is a people problem right there. And then start looking at the concepts, like what do people care about? Like if you say we care about a customer, well, let's understand what that customer is and their journey around their entire your business, right? What is that business workflow, that business process? And literally we talk like you should start drawing these things. What are the boxes and arrows of that customer journey? What other things show up there, right? And I was arguing that this is exactly what we need more of, this business literacy and kind of the techniques is you start identifying a concept. If you're saying a lot of things about that, you want to describe it. That's an important thing. Give it an identifier. We talked about the skills and actually your background, right? You started out as an analyst, but you really enjoyed most and you found it very valuable is understanding the business, right? So one of those skills that you really are interested in the business, you're interested in what people actually care about within that business, right? You talk to the finance, like what keeps you up at night? What do you care about these things? So if you embed yourself in the business, you can really find out the key problems that they need to go solve. And I like what you said. It's like you personally would get a kick out of helping the business users get to their answers. And I think what that really means is that there's a lot of empathy. And I think that's if there is one thing I'm going to take away from this entire conversation is that the skills that data people need to go have within organization is empathy. And when we start mapping out these concepts, right? This is literally the digital representation of the bits and the bytes. The real data work is connecting the concepts back to the real world right there. And at the end of the day, we're here to go help the customers and service them better. And finally, during our lightning round, we talked about the avoid boiling the ocean. It's a hybrid approach, right? Top come get the use cases. You start bottom up with the data. And just like in software engineering, we're going to go refactor. We're going to iterate and follow that dry framework. Don't repeat yourself. Briggs, how did we do? Our takeaways, anything we missed?
That was pretty awesome. Let's not forget about curiosity, though.
Oh, love it. Thank you. Thank you for reminding me. Empathy and curiosity, right?
Yes.
Love this. And yeah, I think culture is, I mean, this is a cultural thing, right? Yep. All right. We usually strive for an hour. We always go over, but this has been such an awesome conversation. Let me throw it back to you. Three final questions. One, what is your advice about data, about modeling, about life, whatever? Second, who should we invite next? And third, what are the resources that you follow? People that you follow, podcasts that you listen, books that you're reading, conferences that you go to?
Well, the advice front, because I've had a lot of people, you know, direct message me either on Twitter or LinkedIn asking for specific, everybody asks for where can I get resources to learn specific technical skills, right? How do I move my career up? And in my experience, right, if you already have a job and you're looking to get into the data space, why not start with where you are? Why not ask your manager or your supervisor, whoever it may be, hey, I'm interested in learning about data. Can I go and talk to the data team? Can I embed myself you could be an analyst, embedded into data engineering team. You could be a finance person embedded into an analytics team and kind of see what they do day to day, join some of their meetings, eventually take on a project, do it on your own free time. You don't have to do it on company time. But if you want to move up on your career, this is what I've done in my career. I've looked for opportunities to help with things that I could do or things that I could learn from books, but I always find a project that I can do something with. And eventually maybe it doesn't turn into anything, but you learned a valuable skill. Maybe an opportunity comes up and you get to transition onto a new role within the company, which is what I did. I went from a product manager onto a data architect. And that's how in my experience, this is the best way to move upwards in your career. A lot of people want to go back to school, get a second degree, get a master's degree. That's fine. But at the end of the day, like doing actual projects within a context that you understand very well, I believe is the best way to move up in your career.
Love that. Do projects to move up in your career. All right, quickly, who should we invite next?
Oh man, I don't have a list of all the folks that you have actually had on the call, on this podcast. I personally would like to see Lars Runback of Anchor Modeling fame. And he's come up with this idea of a singular model based on entity relationship, six normal form, where you explode everything into tables. I'm fascinated by the idea. I'd like to see what he thinks and what he's up to these days.
Awesome. And then finally, what things do you follow? People want to, what are you reading, newsletters or conferences or anything you're going to?
I follow a bunch of newsletters. The one from DBT Labs is the one newsletter that I really like. That gives me kind of an update of where the industry, what the industry is up to, what they're up to. I follow a bunch of folks on LinkedIn. Best thing to do is follow one or follow myself and see who we follow, and just following all the people that we interact with. Same thing with Twitter. And Tim, I don't know if you're on social media at all, but I would follow you as well.
I am. Follow me.
All right.
I will. But yeah.
All right. So takeaway is follow Ergus, Tim, and myself.
Yes.
All right. All right. With that, Ergus, this was a phenomenal conversation. This is a topic that we are not talking enough, and I'm so happy this came out. Thank you so much. And as always, thank you to Data.World, the enterprise data catalog for the modern data sec, who supports us doing this every week. And next week is our season finale, season 3, 25 episodes into this. I think it's going to be our episode 95th next week. And it's just Tim and me. We're going to sit down and just going to do a recap of everything that we have learned in the last, 6 months now.
Yeah.
So that's next week. Look forward to that. Ergus, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. Let's raise a final toast to the data model. And
this is Catalog and Cocktails. A special thanks to Data.World for supporting the show, Carly Berghoff for producing, John Loyens and Brian Jacob for the show music, and thank you to the entire Catalog and Cocktails fan base.